This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. In the middle of often bitter division and partisan rancor, this is a rare good day for political moderates here in Washington. The House of Representatives is expected to pass a measure which could provide federal funds for research on new embryonic stem cell lines, despite opposition from the president and from the Republican leadership. We're going to focus on the science and the politics of the stem cell debate for most of this hour. But first, we want to spend some time on the moderate compromise that pulled the United States Senate back from the brink last night. 14 senators, 7 from each party, agreed to give most of President Bush's controversial judicial nominees an up or down vote. Most, not all. And to preserve the Democrats' right to filibuster in what were described as extraordinary circumstances. If you have questions about the compromise or whether one side or the other gave up too much, give us a call, 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. You can also send us email, TOTN at NPR.org. Yesterday, we talked with NPR senior editor Washington editor Ron Elving about the effect of the so-called nuclear option. Today, Ron returns to look at the political fallout of nuclear de-escalation. Ron, welcome back.
Good to be with you, Neil.
Yesterday, you were skeptical that a compromise was even possible, along with just about everybody else, I should say. What happened?
Along about 7 o'clock last night, they put together the language that was necessary to make everyone reach their comfort zone with trusting each other. And when I say everyone, I mean the 7 Republicans and the 7 Democrats who had been recruited by a couple of active senators who went around and asked their colleagues if this would make them happy, if this would be better in their minds than the showdown over the option. Now, one of the big debates today is what exactly has been accomplished. Clearly, they've stepped back from the precipice, as Senator John McCain said last night, but have they stepped back to step on a banana peel? The Senate Majority Leader, Bill Frist of Tennessee, a Republican, has made it clear he's not buying the compromise, that he is not part of it, and while he may be denied now the votes he needs to go forward with the nuclear option, he would himself not like to be considered part of this compromise, and as far as he's concerned, everything is still on the table, including the nuclear option, including stripping the minority of its right to filibuster or block a vote on a nominee or, for that matter, on a bill.
Mm-hmm. For his part, Howard Dean, the chairman of the Democratic Party, said he sees this as a big defeat for the president and for the Republicans, but not necessarily as a victory for the Democrats.
Helpful, Howard. None of the Democrats who signed on to this deal were particularly pleased to hear it characterized in quite that way, I don't think. But both sides, really, in this engagement are having to give up something. It appears, from the standpoint of many activist Democrats, that they've given up quite a lot in agreeing to have Priscilla Owen, Janice Rogers Brown, and also William Pryor go to a vote. All these are highly conservative, ideologically conservative judges who will have a huge impact on 3 different circuit courts of appeal for the United States federal judiciary. So they're unhappy about that. On the other hand, you know, Howard Dean can make his case by saying that the president has been forced to give a little ground on that up or down vote principle for every single nominee. And the president, for his part, can say, well, we've made progress. Yeah. We've gotten some people a vote who have been waiting for years, and now they're going to get one. It's about time. And that's exactly what he said.
Mm-hmm. Now, does this have much chance of holding together?
Well, it's made it through several hours of today. I, at one point, was not so sure it was going to make it to noon, but it did, and it has made it now midway into the afternoon. We still have not actually had the vote to confirm Priscilla Owen.
There was a vote, though, to end the debate on Priscilla Owen, the so-called cloture vote.
That's correct, and at one time it appeared that was an unnecessary vote. Harry Reid, the Democratic leader in the Senate, said, let's just dispense with that, go straight to the vote. But for reasons of his own, Bill Frist, the Republican leader, wanted to go ahead and have that vote, get it on the record, I suspect because he knew it would be a very lopsided vote in favor of ending the filibuster. And it was. It was 81 votes to end the filibuster and only 18 against. So he got to make his point and also to reiterate that he was not part of this compromise agreement.
Now, the Democrats preserved their right to filibuster in what they described as extraordinary circumstances. Now, that is a phrase that I think is going to be open to a lot of interpretation.
You bet. I think the Republicans will see the phrase as meaning someone who is so beyond the pale that they could not be recognized as either speaking English or participating in the Anglo-American tradition of jurisprudence. I think the Democrats, on the other hand, will define extraordinary circumstance as a Supreme Court vacancy. And just about anyone that President Bush can get happy with as a nominee to fill that Supreme Court vacancy will strike the Democrats as unacceptable, and they'll call it an extraordinary circumstance.
If you'd like to weigh in on this, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, the email address totn@npr.org. We're talking about the filibuster compromise. Later in the program, we're going to be focusing on the stem cell debate, but let's talk now with Scott. Scott with us on the phone from Larkspur, California.
Yeah, I just think the thing that's lost in this whole conversation is that the Democrats already did compromise. They approved 200 and I'm not sure exactly how many of the 218 candidates who were brought forward. I mean, the Democrats are generally becoming the jellyfish politicians of all time. I'm just so disappointed in this whole compromise nonsense. They already did compromise. Now they're compromised more. Thank you.
Okay, Scott. Thanks very much.
Yeah.
And Scott is certainly not going to be alone in that opinion.
Absolutely not. But let's consider this to even take Scott's point further. The Democrats not only approved all the district court judges, that's the trial level of the federal judiciary, that President Bush suggested or nominated. They also had already approved the majority of appellate level nominees. And of course, we hadn't had any to go all the way to the Supreme Court yet. So the Democrats have really performed pretty well on historical averages for approving these people, especially compared to the treatment that was given to President Clinton's nominees for some of these same vacancies back in the later 90s. They didn't get to the Senate floor. They were bottled up in committee. So they didn't have to be filibustered. They were done in back in committee. Mm-hmm. And it was really payback for that treatment that led the Democrats to get aggressive about a few of these appellate court judges. And Scott is absolutely right. It's a terribly small percentage, really, of President Bush's nominees. On the other hand, President Bush is the president. He has the right to appoint these people. The Republicans do have a majority in the Senate, and there is every reason to expect that they're going to move along a certain number of conservative nominees. What the Democrats have been holding out for is the right to object to people who they consider to be over the line.
Well, if this compromise can hold, can they force the White House to negotiate with them on potential nominees, particularly for the Supreme Court?
The advocates of this compromise, the 14 people, say that's exactly its value. That Lindsey Graham, for example, Republican from South Carolina, has saying now the White House will have to listen to us and talk to us and negotiate, if you will, over what kind of people we want to put in the appellate level and in the Supreme Court. Several of the Democrats have made the same point. It's not clear, however, that the White House reads it that way. It's not clear that the Republicans in the Senate who are not party to this gang of 14, as you say, will agree to that interpretation. It's not at all clear that this will change President Bush's notion of whom he wishes to put on the Supreme Court, and I suspect he's already got a candidate in mind.
There are some winners and losers, though, already clear. The majority leader, Bill Frist of Tennessee, a man who's running for president, he comes out not looking well out of this.
He maintained his dignity today on the floor of the Senate, and he sought a couple of points where he could exert his authority, such as calling for this cloture vote. But I don't think there's any way you get around seeing this as at least a mini-rebellion against his leadership on the part of at least seven Republican senators. And I would suggest that there were more than seven Republicans who were relieved to see this outcome. So there's been an expression of displeasure with the way he was leading the party on this particular issue. It is the Senate Majority Leader's job, in tradition, to find the sense of the Senate and then help the Senate work its will. If there's a deal out there that can be made with the minority so that you can move the agenda forward, that's your job. Bill Frist clearly chose not to make the deal, and the deal was available, or else this compromise could not have happened.
What about that group of 14? Do they run political risks in their next elections? I know some conservative activist groups have already said, we will remember.
The Family Research Council has already said so. Focus on the Family has already said so. Some of these people could be hurt in their states by that kind of resistance from social conservatives and activists.
John McCain of Arizona, Republican, denies any interest in running for president again, yet he comes out looking like a winner on this.
He does, and the fact that he is still, in some sense, just beyond the control of the Bush White House, just beyond the control of the Republican leadership in the Senate, marks him again as the kind of maverick that makes some Americans fond of him. Doesn't necessarily get him the nomination of the Republican Party, but it will probably raise his standing in the polls in general. I think there are some other people among these compromise senators who might have larger ambitions in the long run as well.
So the Senate moderates, at least thus far, come out the winners. Today in the House of Representatives, they're likely to pass this bill on embryonic stem cell research that's opposed by both the president and the House Republican leadership. More on this after the break. But Ron, I wanted to ask you before we got there, are we seeing a moderate militants coming out here?
I think we're seeing a couple of issues framed in such a way that Republican moderates who have been looking for an opportunity to step away from the general direction of their party in Congress, not necessarily the party in the country, but the party in Congress has been taking a distinctly rightward direction in the last several years. The leadership has gotten more conservative in the last several years. And some of these people have been looking for a way to differentiate themselves, and they're getting it. They're getting it on the judicial issue, where polls show most Americans would prefer to have down the middle, more or less consensual, centrist judges. And they're getting it again here on the stem cell issue in the House, where most people think that there must be some way to figure out to take advantage of the science opportunity of stem cells. Obviously, a lot of people feel that there's too much of an ethical sacrifice in any kind of stem cell research, and that's the president's position. So the president has said he's going to veto this stem cell bill. But we'll see what happens.
Ron Elving, thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you, Neil. My pleasure.
NPR Senior Washington Editor Ron Elving with us here in Studio 3A. When we come back from the break, the conversation moves to that debate over stem cell research in the House of Representatives. If you have questions about the science and the politics of that issue, give us a call. The number, as always, is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. Back after the break, it's Talk of the Nation from NPR News.